Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Annabelle. And today I have with me Ann Morgan from New Hampshire and Andy Flynn from Michigan. And they are going to talk about their personal experiences, how they've been personally affected by the economy. They've been unemployed and have been on benefits, and I think their benefits expired yesterday. So they're facing some bleak choices there starting today. So we're going to talk to them about how they're doing, what their stories are, and how they feel about what's happening in Washington right now. So welcome, Ann and Andy. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your story?
Sure. I've been working in New Hampshire for the last 30 years. I have been in administrative work the entire time, and I've worked for some large companies and small. I have two children that we were able to educate before everything turned upside down, and now they have families of their own. My husband has a job. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay enough to support the entire household because we've always gone on two wages, and now it's getting down to the wire, and I'm looking for anything out there, really, just to sustain our livelihood, not to give us any extras, because we seem to be happy with what we've got at the moment, but things do come up, like car repairs and doctor's visits and things like that. So we don't have really any extra income for those types of things right now. So we're keeping our fingers crossed and hoping that everything stays okay until I find a decent paying job. I don't want to make a lot of money. I just want to make a wage and put food on our table and keep a roof over our head.
How about you, Andy? What's been going on with you?
Well, I'm 45 years old and have worked my whole life pretty much in sales and customer service. The last 15 years I've worked in technology sales and have always made a great income. And about 19 months ago I was downsized from a company that I was working for, a technology company. And I've just been trying to find work ever since. And it's been very difficult. It's been a struggle here in Michigan. I apply for a lot of jobs. I do a lot of networking. I even do a lot of social media stuff on Twitter and mainly LinkedIn, looking for jobs, searching for jobs, trying to connect with people. And it's very difficult here in Michigan. I've kind of looked in Chicago, and I have a 9-year-old son and a wife. It's put a lot of stress on our marriage. My wife works. And she has health benefits through her job, which is great. We're very thankful for that. And we're hoping that I can find something. And if it means moving to Chicago and me living there for a year and seeing how things work out, you know, so be it. That's what we do. I'm totally open to relocating.
I wanted to ask you guys about the current situation right now in terms of the unemployment benefits. I understand that you guys have both been on benefits, is that right? And they just expired for both of you, right? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I went on unemployment after our company was acquired and downsized, and I've been on unemployment now for 19 months. It's a little different here in New Hampshire because they look at it differently as far as the quarters go. So the first 23 weeks I was making around $360 a week, and then it was cut to $212 a week, and then on my last extension it was brought up again to $300 a week, but I was bringing home close to $700 a week, so it's a big adjustment. So my last check will be next week. I filed for unemployment this week, and I'll file next Monday, and that will be my last check.
And again, right. Same here with Andy. I've been on benefits since March of 2009, and there was 26 weeks through Michigan, and then the federal extension kicked in, and I've been on the federal extension, but with the stalemate in the House, I believe that those are all done, pretty much abruptly finished. I think I was going to collect through February, but, you know, it wasn't much. It was about, $362 a week. And, I mean, I was salaried plus commission. You know, I was making six figures before I was downsized. So, I mean, unemployment does a little bit for me, but, you know, it's nowhere, you know, you can't really live off of unemployment. And, you know, I feel bad collecting unemployment. This is the first time I've ever had to collect before in my entire life, entire working life, my entire adult life. And, you know, my friends and family tell me not to feel bad. They're like, you paid into the system for all these years. You know, you take what you can get. And, you know, I've vigorously looked for a job. I haven't given up. I'm a positive person. And, you know, I keep on, you know, hoping, and, you know, I have the faith that, you know, some of these, you know, resumes and things that I'm sending out and some of these networking events that I'm going to are going to pay off in the long run.
And the same here. I've been pretty positive through this whole thing also. You have to be, otherwise it affects your health. If you're not getting up in the morning and thinking that there's something is going to come up.
I agree. I mean, I went through five interviews with a Fortune 500 company about 5 months ago, and I was one of about 4,500 people that had applied, and it got whittled down to about 40 people, and they were hiring 20, and unfortunately I wasn't in, you know, the 20 that they hired, if they even did hire 20 people, because you really don't get any feedback from any of the companies that you apply with. It just seems it's been very difficult to get any feedback either way. And it's difficult to even get a contact within the company. I mean, I use LinkedIn. I use a lot of the tools, and, you know, you're getting people's voicemails, or they're just not taking your calls, or, you know, I've even stopped in at a number of the companies that I've applied for, and, you know, they're like, well, without an appointment, we don't let you talk to anybody, and, you know, a lot of times, even if you call, you know, you just can't get through to them. So, you know, that gets a bit frustrating.
Right.
Sometimes when you call, you feel like you're invading their space, and you don't want to bother them. But on the other hand, it's very frustrating because you don't know what they're thinking. They're giving you the impression that you're hireable. Because you've got all the, you've got everything that they're looking for pretty much in your resume, but they just don't get back to you.
I mean, I've also been hearing that people who have been, unemployed for, say, over 6 months are being discriminated against. Like they just don't even want to look at resumes from people who have been, you know, unemployed for, you know, a while. Is that your experience?
It's hard to say because you're not getting, they're not going to tell you that they're discriminating against you. It's, in my case, you know, I'm over 50 years old, so I assume that when I go into a interview that they're looking at me and saying, this lady's not going to, she's too old for the position. So I can't say they're discriminating against me because I'm thinking about it. Just as I've heard the same thing. I've heard that, you know, the longer you're out of work, the less hireable you are. But you don't know these things. They're not going to divulge that information to you.
Right.
And
yeah.
And you can't accuse them just because you feel that way. But it seems that the more people I speak to in my age group have the same feelings mm-hmm. I do, and mm-hmm. the same with being out of work for as long as we have. It's very difficult. I volunteer at a hospital, and I think that helps a little bit, but it hasn't helped me get a position anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it's hard to say about the discrimination piece, Annabelle. I mean, a lot of companies are out there. If they put postings, some of them had put postings on the internet where they don't want to talk to unemployed people. I think they got kind of a backlash and, you know, they kind of removed that wording. But, you know, I feel like I'm very qualified. The HR people that I do get through with, you know, think that I'm very qualified. And mm-hmm. I've just been really able to, you know, network with friends and family and people that know me who can actually, you know, because anyone can, you know, write up a resume. It's a piece of paper and say anything on it. And I'm a very honest person. I would never, you know, say anything that, you know, is not true on my resume, because that's, I mean, to me, that's, you know, trust and honesty is very important. But, you know, you do think about it, you know, to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like Ann said, I volunteer as well. I volunteer at Gleaners once a month, and I'm active with the YMCA. I'm a coach for the YMCA Youth Sports, and I'm a webmaster for a couple of different websites for my son's school and for his Boy Scouts club. And, you know, it just, you know, keeps you busy. But, you know, it's, you know, those are things I do at night when I'm not looking for, you know, when I'm not looking for a job or I'm out networking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, have you contacted your representatives, like your senators, your reps in the House? I mean, have you talked to them about it or written to them?
I actually called our governor, Governor Lynch, several months ago, just out of frustration, and they were, you know, apologetic, and they came across as being very sympathetic, but all they can do is send you to the state website where they have job postings, and even the job postings on the website for the state are the same postings that you get on Craigslist or jobsinnewhampshire.com. Any of those websites, they're all the same job descriptions. You don't know who you're dealing with when you're sending out these resumes. They're confidential, or you have to go through certain companies by way of sending your resume through the internet. You're not allowed to knock on doors anymore. You have to send everything over the internet. And you really don't know who you're dealing with, and mm-hmm. you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's okay. Talk to me about how you feel now that you know that there isn't enough support, it looks like, in Congress for the extension. What's going through your mind? Andy, why don't you start?
I had contacted some of the Michigan House and Senate leaders a number of times just to express my frustrations with, you know, just being unemployed and, you know, trying to get their assistance for us. And just trying to spur the economy, help job creation, and, you know, extend the benefits when they were out there needed to be extended. I'm just very frustrated with the Congress and the Senate the way they are today. We don't have lobbyists that can work with us. That's one of the reasons I joined the Coffee Party. It's a great group of people, and I like what they stand for, and just not real happy with what's going on in Washington on either side of the House, on the Democratic or the Republican side. It just seems like they are out there for the interests of the rich and the lobbyists, and there's really no one representing the middle class. It's very disappointing.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel there's anyone at all fighting for you in Washington? I mean, how do you – did you guys vote for President Obama? Do you feel like he's someone who –
Yes, I voted for President Obama, but I believe that he was given so much to deal with when he came into office that a lot of what's going on now is just – daunting to him. He's working on as much as he can. It's like everything, it's all emergency. I'm very frustrated that the middle class is being downtrodden by Congress when they're looking out for the 1% of the money earners that already make 80% of the income in this country, that they're not looking out for the people that are keeping this country going. So that 1% is not, that 1% is not sharing their wealth with the rest of the country right now, and that is what frustrates me. We can elect and put into Congress and put into the White House, but it's still we the people. We still have to look out for ourselves, and that has gone away, and now the Congress and the Senate have overshadowed it by not even paying attention to the working class when they're looking at the fiscal responsibility of Washington. It's frustrating, and it you don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, from my angle, I was an Obama supporter, and a number of my Republican friends voted for Obama, 2 years ago, and he had a lot to deal with. He had a record number of Republican filibusters that he had to deal with. They just didn't really seem to want to work with him on anything. It almost just seems like the Republican side of the House just wants to see him fail no matter what. And, it's not doing the country any good. It's not doing, generally any good. And, seeing the 42 Republican, House members banding together, on CNN today and saying, they're not gonna do their job until, the rich get their tax cuts. And the way I look at it is, the Bush tax cuts from 2001 and 2003, they were temporary for a reason, and I don't really see where they were particularly effective over the last 8 years and why they should be extended now. I'm familiar with a balance sheet, and a tax cut is, just the same as a spending increase to me.
Well, I can understand tax cuts for the working class and the poor, only because, if you have high interest payments on your mortgage, or, you're purchasing a car that you really need more than having it as a luxury, I can understand those tax cuts. But to give to hold the working class hostage by saying, mm-hmm. well, if we give them the tax cuts, then we have to give that 1% the tax cuts. The 1% don't need the tax cuts. They just want to get wealthier and wealthier. And it's the working class right now that are being held hostage. If those tax cuts weren't allowed for that 1%, it would help the working class out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're not looking
well, I'm just wondering, this is the frustration that I personally have with this issue, because it's not even just that, this would help people who are unemployed. The extension would actually help our entire economy. And so, people who are opposed to it are, in a sense, really impeding the recovery of the economy. And I guess that is where I just feel like there's no way to rationalize that. There's no way to justify that at all, because that's hurting every single person that's within our economy, including the wealthy. Ultimately, it's gonna hurt them as well. And so, I mean, that's what I don't really get. Like, what is it that they just don't understand that this is the reality? Do they? It's just completely, in a way, at some level, just baffling to me. Like, what is their interest? What is their allegiance? Because it just doesn't seem reality-based at all. So, I would just love to just kind of get into their minds, like the people who are really opposed to this, Republicans and Democrats, because not all Democrats support the extension, and just ask them, like, what's really going on there?
You have every right to do that. You can write to your senators, and you can write to your congressmen. You can write to the President of the United States. They're not going to tell you the truth. They're not going to tell you why they're doing what they're doing, because they don't want you to know what they're doing. And that's where it becomes frustrating. They're having contributions given to them by multi-million-dollar corporations. If they mm-hmm. didn't have those contributions, they couldn't be where they are today. And that's where it's all coming from, I feel. And it's very frustrating to call anybody in the Senate or the Congress or even writing to the president, because you're not going to get the truth. You're not going to get the real reason why this is all happening. And there is a reason. They do have an agenda, and that agenda does not include the working class and the poor. It doesn't include us.
Right. But what I'm saying, though, is ultimately, in the end, even the big corporations will be negatively affected by the lack of recovery in the economy, right? So
no, because there's a globalization, there's a world economy. It's not just the American economy. There is now a world economy that's been going on since the 90s, since Clinton
right.
put NAFTA
through. I just don't think that quite explains everything, because even if they're interested in benefiting from the status quo, the global economy, it still doesn't help the corporations. It only helps their most. It might help with very short term gain, but not in the end long term gain. If the U.S. economy remains stagnant and can't recover, that affects the global economy as well. So in the end, everyone hurts in the long run. I think part of the issue is the distinction between short-term gain and long-term gain.
And the long-term.
And so it's incredibly short-sighted not to support, you know, programs that actually would help the overall recovery of the economy. Andy, what were you going to say?
Well, Annabelle, there certainly is a disconnect just between the Republican and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it's really, I look at it as the last 3 months, it kind of seems like things are starting to turn around slowly but surely. And right when things are starting to turn around, they want to remove all the, you know, the benefits and the, you know, really it's economic stimulus is what they're trying to remove right when things are starting to turn. And I can kind of see things turning. I mean, there are more job postings. There's more, if you look at the unemployment numbers and the people filing the last 3 months, those numbers are going down. And, you know, it's, you know, slowly but surely, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but it is starting to, you know, look like there is a turnaround happening. And right when it started to happen, they're undercutting us. So, you know, it's very frustrating to, you know, see how much we're spending on the military in Afghanistan. And, you know, now there's issues between North and South Korea and how they're going to address Iran. And, you know, there's all these problems at home that they're really it just seems like they're not interested in addressing them. I don't know why.
Right. Yeah, and I think we're all in agreement. There's definitely a fundamental disconnection. I mean, I'm just wondering for you personally, for both of you guys, what are you going to do? I mean, what will your life be like without the benefits? And what do you think will happen?
Again, I'm trying to stay very positive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky where my husband does still have his job. It's going to be difficult. I'm pretty positive about it. I dread the thought of losing my home and losing, you know, even my vehicle. You know, those are two fundamental things of life, is to have a roof over your head and, you know, food on the table and being able to, you know, drive to point A or point B. There's no transportation around here, so it's not like I can go out and get on a bus and go up into town and do my shopping. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for us. But I learned a while ago that it's not worth letting the anxiety take over. I still believe something will come up. Something,
mm-hmm.
even if it's you know, for $8 an hour, you know, I will have to take it. And right now with the Christmas season, I think a lot of stores, although I've applied to Walmart and I haven't received any information back from them. So I'm just hoping and praying that something will come up and trying to keep a positive outlook on it.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, same here. I'm trying to positive. I'm probably looking. I've got a couple options, I guess. Cashing in what little I have in my 401k, which is maybe, I mean, after you take the, you know, the 30% hit on the taxes, it's maybe 20 or 30 grand, something I haven't figured out the numbers yet. That's one option I have open to me. I really don't want to do that. That's really a last resort. I have a lot of, I believe I still have equity in my house. I don't know if I can sell it. My wife and I have talked about putting our house up for sale. I don't know if it would sell in this market. But even then, you know, we're going to be lucky to get maybe 20, 30 grand out of it, and then we got to find a place to live. But rent is so cheap now. I mean, there was on the cover of Time magazine 2 or 3 months back, I think it was, where, you know, is it actually better to rent now than even own a house? You know, that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we're looking at our options. I mean, I can take a job that doesn't pay anything. I can take a commission-only sales job and hope that I can sell. And,
uh-huh.
You know, that's a big leap of faith for me. I'm, I've never had to do that my entire life, and you know, I'm open to doing that, but you know, I'm probably going to work, you know, for at least a month or two without getting paid until I can bring in some commission. And you know, I mean, that's a lot of the sales jobs that are available in Michigan. I mean, there are so many people out of work that, I mean, there's not really many salary jobs out there. It's all, they pretty much want you to come in and just sell and, you know, pay you, you know, a relatively decent commission. So, you know, so I'm looking at doing something like that. You know, I'm lucky. I have a little bit of 401k money. I don't want to touch that, but if I have to, I'll have to. And, you know, so I have a few options, and, you know, we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah, we...
So you don't have children, is that right, Andy? Do you guys have children?
I'm sorry, Annabelle.
Do you have children?
Yeah, I have a 9-year-old son, and, you know, he wants, you know, everything under the sun for Christmas, of course, and, you know, we've prepared him, we've told him, you know, times are tough, and... You know, let's just be happy that we're together and, you know, we have a roof over our head and he goes to a great school and, you know, I'm just hoping to keep him in that same school. And we've lived frugally for really the last 2 or 3 years.
We've cut back on a lot. We cut back on a lot when I first lost my position. So it's not like we're going to miss an awful lot if I don't collect my benefits. I mean, I'm certainly going to have to cut back a little bit more. But I have some things to fall back on. I'm an artist, and I, you know, have sold some of my paintings, not as much as what I'd like to. I mean, I put a lot of time into them, but I don't think that it's going to be long before I'll probably get a job at the, you know, local supermarket or something like that, just to tide us over. And but we've already told our children and grandchildren that it's going to be a very lean Christmas. And you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to refinance our house, and which brought our payments down substantially. And we're fortunate where we haven't lost, because we live on the coast, we haven't lost any equity. And I feel bad for the people that have. I mean, it's tough. They've got these upside-down mortgages, but we were lucky to be able to refinance. And I think if anybody is given the opportunity, as soon as they get laid off, I think they should go to their bank or go to their lender and see if they can work things out immediately before it gets too late, because that's where people can get into trouble. They wait too long and they don't look at it as, you know, a long-term thing, and it could be a couple of years before you're back working again.
Mm-hmm. My wife and I had investigated the mortgage remodification. We were with one of the large lenders, and I mean, when we bought our house 10 years ago, we were able to put a substantial amount down on the house, and we also put a lot of money into the house fixing it up. And you know, we looked into doing one of those remodifications, and I mean, our house payments like $1,200 a month, they were going to lower it like $150 a month, and it was an absolute nightmare to deal with those people. And so we just put it on. We told them we're good now. We haven't missed a mortgage payment or been late on a payment in 10 years. And, you know, I'll probably be contacting them here in December and telling them, you know, it's going to be difficult to start making those payments, you know, in January and February, because we're, you know, we've pretty much tapped out our savings, you know, other than touching our 401ks. We both have 401ks, so.
Well, let me ask you something. I mean, you know, in terms of solutions, I mean, this is these economic issues that we're facing are affecting your lives very personally and directly. But if you could take a step back and, you know, look at this in terms of policies and legislation, what makes sense to you? Like, what would you like to see happen? I mean, other than, you know, extending benefits, what would you like to see happen? Anne, do you want to start?
What I would like to see happen is more businesses starting up in the United States, more manufacturing companies to get people back to work. I know there's people out there that can start these businesses up, and I think that's the only solution that we have right now, other than relying on our government, which has abandoned us. But I think if people are planning on starting businesses, then they should take a good look at how it's going to affect their community, people that they can hire, and just get things rolling one more time. The tax credits, they entice people into different states. I know New Hampshire is a prime example, and they really don't work. They have to, legislature has to look at business taxes and different options on how to attract businesses into their states and into our country, rather than relying on the large companies, the big corporations, and like GM or even the large banks today are laying off thousands and thousands of people. So I think it's going to rely on us, the people, getting the economy going by starting their own small businesses and hiring local people to help them with those businesses.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel like... sorry, Andy, I didn't give you a chance to answer that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Annabelle. Well, for one, I'd like to see, the federal government, for one, they've got to let the companies, the corporations, whether they're big or small, let them know what the tax structure is going to be in the coming years. That needs to be decided, these tax cuts for the rich or, the middle class. I mean, that's got to be decided. But I'd love to see some incentives for some of these companies that are still shipping jobs overseas to hire U.S. workers. I mean,
yeah.
You've got the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is still all for outsourcing jobs overseas. And, when you look at all the issues that we've had with the products overseas, with, children's toys and, all these different things that we've seen coming from overseas that have, all the huge recalls, I mean, I think you see that there's, there's good quality workers here in the U.S., and, wages have, they have gone down. I think the U.S. workers have come to expect these high wages, and, those wages aren't necessarily there anymore.
Right.
And, the auto workers have seen that, for one thing. But, it would be nice to see these companies. Even here in Michigan, it's very difficult. We've got a new governor coming in, a Republican governor, and he's going to redo the whole tax structure and, make incentives for companies to come here. But still, it's the end of 2010. No companies know what that structure is going to be like, whether it's going to be favorable to them or not. And, it's hard to say. So, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Necessarily that, the tax cuts for the rich, I haven't seen where that's produced any jobs job creation or additional spending over the last 8 years. I, you know, to me,
yeah.
just let it expire, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but there's okay. work to do that they need to do here at home.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of your kind of engagement politically, right? I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, there are 50 million people right now that are receiving benefits of some kind from the federal government, and one out of six Americans are in poverty, you know, kind of strictly, technically speaking. That's a lot of people in our country that we could mobilize, right, to have impact on policies and elections. But it seems that it's very difficult to really mobilize them, and I don't know. I don't know if anyone's done this study about the midterm turnout, but my sense is that a lot of people who are directly impacted stayed at home, opted out. You know, they weren't engaged and or organized. And so I'm just kind of curious how you guys feel. Like, do you feel politically disengaged or more engaged now that you're in this situation? Andy, why don't you start with that one?
I'd say I'm more engaged. I was disappointed, you know, with the election results, the recent election results, because it seemed like the young people stayed home and it was the older vote that really, you know, voted the people in that were voted in. And you know, I was disappointed that there weren't more people voting with the state of the economy. But I think it's a lot of frustration. I think people are just kind of giving up on Washington. You know, either way, either party, there's so much partisanship on either side. I mean, I typically vote one way. I mean, I'm open to voting Republican, Democrat, and independent. I voted for more independents this year in the last election than I did ever before, just because I'm so sick of the partisanship of both parties not working together, not getting anything done. And, you know, I was disappointed with, you know, the amount of people that vote. I mean, the voter turnout was not that great for the midterms.
Yeah.
Especially from the young.
How about you, Anne? I mean, how do you feel?
Well, I feel that I've always been engaged in politics, but I feel that now that more than ever that there isn't really anybody out there to hear my voice. I've written to my senators, and I've called my governor. I've even written a letter to Obama. And I get responses that aren't very satisfying. I get Obama telling me I should go back to school, or I should look up on my state's website, or these are things I already know. And I just feel that I'm being, you know, kind of shucked around a little bit, you know. But I've always been a political person. I've never seen anything like this, never seen anything this disconnected from the people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm curious, Anne, I mean, given that you grew up in England, where, you know, I guess the kind of class consciousness or class kind of differences have always been part of the public discourse, right? And in America, mm-hmm. we tend not to talk about things in terms of class. Like, there's a class struggle or class, you know, warfare going on. But I think that, I mean, given these income disparities and what seems to be just inherently unfair tax policies, like, do you feel like that's a good way of kind of understanding what's going on, that there's kind of a class struggle or class warfare going on?
I do now more so than ever in this country. I feel that there's a disparity amongst the class where 20 years ago, it didn't matter.
Right.
You know, people were all in the same circles. Today, they're totally apart. And, you know, I didn't grow up in England. I came over here when I was 9 years old, but I've heard my parents talk about, you know, different ways of doing things in England, with the health care, for one, the socialized medicine, which is called nationalized medicine, over there. But everybody is given a chance to have prenatal care and care as they're growing up with their teeth and whatnot. You've always had the option of purchasing that extra insurance, which a lot of my family have. They have an extra insurance to cover what the social medicine or the nationalized medicine doesn't. And it's not very much different than growing up here in the States, other than you've got more corporation involvement, you've got more insurance company involvement, you've got more big companies holding the bag, whereas in England, you have a lot of smaller. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of large corporations, other than BP, the oil companies. But
right. Well, you know what?
There is a difference.
We have somebody who wants to join our call. Can you hang on 1 second, okay?
Oh, sure.
Hi there. You're online with us. Hi.
Are you speaking with me?
Yeah, who is this? Hi, did someone join us? Someone was waiting to call in.
Are you speaking with me?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't press one for a cue, so I wasn't sure whether I was just listening at this point.
Oh, you were, okay. I didn't realize that,
but,
okay.
But that's okay. Actually, I haven't really had been able to listen to the whole thing. I'm trying to listen. My name is Bill Galloway.
Your name? Okay.
And you
go
know,
ahead.
I've been trying to listen on my phone, and I haven't been able to really get much. So I'm not sure that you touch on this subject or not. But my main point is with, you know, we have a major unemployment problem in this country. But what politicians and what no one seems to be talking about at this point is the wage, you know, the problem with wages. You know, once you get a job, it doesn't pay a living wage.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know whether we touched on that or not today, but, you know, it just seems like, you know, with wages being down and productivity being up, you know, these jobs don't seem like they're going to be coming back because corporations really have no incentive to hire anybody. You know, the jobs being done by less and less people, and you know that puts a glut in the labor market, and you know, so that drives wages down. So you know, until we get some kind of legislation or we get something to encourage corporations to hire people, you know, I don't see a solution here.
Yeah. Well, I want to kind of present some economic context for this. So right now, the richest 1% of Americans take home almost 24% of the entire income, and that's up from 9% in 1976. And the CEOs of the largest companies in America earned 40 times as much as the average worker in 1980. But now they earn 531 times as much starting 2001. And the last thing is, you know, between 1980 and 2005, more than four-fifths of the total increase in American income went to the richest 1%. That's staggering. And so, I mean, you know, the income disparity is such that America is, you know, being compared to third world countries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just an incredible tragedy that I think once you kind of aggregate the numbers and look at the big picture, this is what people are saying, that America is becoming a plutocracy of the wealthy controlling our society and our government, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that more and more people are like starting to just kind of say out loud now, instead of kind of beating around the bush and saying, oh, we're losing the middle class, or the American dream is fading, like all those euphemisms. But, you know, now more and more people are writing books about it and just saying it. Like Bill Moyers is just saying it, that we had a plutocracy. This is not a democracy. In a democracy, this kind of income disparity, power disparity wouldn't exist, because it's the same thing now. Income and power disparity is just unthinkable what's happened to our country since, you know, about 1980. So that's kind of like the context of the experiences that you guys are having personally, like, you know, out
mm-hmm.
there, proverbial Main Street, you know, what's happening out there is that, you know, just systematically our money, literally our money and our homes and our power has been dwindling away, been taken away. And you know, so now we're here today, December of 2010, after, you know, almost 30 years of these sorts of policies, and we have to figure out how to undo it. And it's a very,
right.
very tall order. It's a very, it's just an, you know, incredible challenge that we're facing, that, you know, the 99% of us who feel, at some point, you know, voiceless in our own government.
Taxes. You know, their tax rate is, you know, 35 to 39%, and I mean, you look in the 60s and the 70s, and they were paying, you know, 50-60% of their income was going to taxes, and you know, mm-hmm. now they're near a record low for these people that are making over, you know, $370,000-$400,000 a year, what they're paying. And you know, then you've got, you know, the Republicans in the Senate, in the House, saying, well, these millionaires need this big tax break.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because the millionaires are giving them the money to be there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how mm-hmm. they're there in the first place. They're getting the money from that 1% to be where they are today. But people don't see it, or they refuse to see what is going on with our government. And our government is being bought by that 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
You know,
yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, and you know, in the past we've had organized labor to level that playing field, but you know, organized labor, I'm lucky enough to work in to be a member of a union, and you know, organized labor has lost so much power. And, you know, there's so few people that, you know, labor has virtually, you know, no voice out there. So, you know, that's one of our voice. Exactly.
It has no voice. That organized labor is a thing of the past now, because our government has gotten rid of it so that they can take over what controls they have with any type of labor movements. And what has happened is when they passed the NAFTA agreement, I don't want to keep dwelling on that, but it gave corporations a chance to look at other countries and what they could pay their labor. So if they're paying somebody 50 cents an hour to manufacture something that would cost $10 an hour in the United States, then it's a no-brainer. They're going to ship all their all their equipment over to Taiwan or to Hong Kong or any subsidiary of China to get those products made at a cheaper rate. At first, we were all asleep. We didn't see this happening because nobody was really paying attention because we were living in such prosperity. But now that prosperity is gone, people are starting to wonder, why isn't this made in the United States? Why is it being made in Mexico? Why is it being made in China? Hello? We shipped all those jobs overseas. We did that. Our government did that. And
right.
We allowed it to happen. We allowed that to happen. So what we need to do now is we need to bring some of those manufacturing jobs back to this country. We'll never be making the money we made 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We'll never be making that. But at least those things will be made here. At least
mm-hmm.
we won't. And people don't realize what it costs to ship things back and forth. I mean, there's a lot that goes into exporting and importing that jacked the prices up in the first
right.
place. So to me, it never made any sense, but that's what happened while we were sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with what Ann is saying, but at the same time, I mean, we're the consumers that are purchasing the products. And granted, you know, we've
exactly.
been pretty frugal over the years, but, you know, it's almost like, you know, there needs to be a, you know, organize and boycott these products that, you know, are made overseas. You know, if you don't agree with it, you know, I think that's one way of, you know, if the demand's not there, they can't produce, you know. And
yeah,
I hate to see you hurt anymore, but, you know, a lot
well,
of these
you know
products
what?
Are...
I think, you know, one of the things that you're speaking to there, Andy, is the inherent power that we have being just part of the system as consumers and voters, even though, you know, the choices in our candidates are definitely disappointing. They actually don't have jobs without votes from us. And so I think we definitely are in a position, you know, if we can organize ourselves and mobilize as a block of voters, we can have enormous power. It just hasn't been done yet. You know, that
right.
it hasn't been, it's been very difficult to gather up all the Americans who feel voiceless right now and disaffected to work together so that we actually have systemic change that leads to a balance of power. You know, so that, you know, there's a restoration of power of ordinary, you know, middle class working Americans. So, I mean, I think that has to be part of the solution, that people not only wake up to the reality, but then say, okay, let's work together. Let's put aside differences that we have and work together so we change this thing that we're all affected by. That's going to actually lead to a decay of our entire society, not just our economy, not just our government, but our entire country will be pretty much in ruins if it continues at this rate, right? And so I think that's going to be the challenge. I mean, it's definitely, you know, a challenge for the coffee party is to try to get people into dialogue and find places where we can agree and say, this is something that affects all of us. Let's just work together instead of being pitted against one another as Republicans and Democrats, or as, you know, homeless versus the working class, or working class versus middle class, like all these, you know, stratifications that we've developed. But let's just kind of put that aside and work on this. So that's, I feel that's kind of where we are as a movement. Let's see if we can build kind of this large coalition of people who can not only fight for democracy, but really get citizens, all the citizens, to feel empowered again by working together, by aggregating numbers. So actually, our show's about to end, I'm sorry to say. But so I just wanted to you know, say thank you, Ann and Andy, for, you know, joining us today for the conversation. We'll have to bring you guys back again soon so we can check in about how you guys are doing. And thanks
for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing all your stories. We'll have to do this again. In about a month or so, we'll check back in with you guys and see what's going on. Thanks for being part of the coffee party.
I want to wish Andy good luck in his job endeavors, and we'll keep in touch, and hopefully something will come up for both of us.
Absolutely. Good luck with you with all that. And there's plenty of volunteer opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
With the party.
Yes,
so let me know.
Thanks a lot, Anna. Thank you.
Thank you. It was nice talking
Thanks
to all of you.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye. Take care.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.